This is Unfortunate History.
What's up, everybody? This is Cody Pennington.
And this is Greg Skinner.
And welcome to Unfortunate History. This is a podcast that covers the wacky, unfortunate, and really interesting moments in history. And it's great to be back for season two.
Season two? Who would have thought we'd ever get to a season two?
I wouldn't have. And honestly, we didn't number it correctly at all. Some people do multiples of, say like even numbers, say like, or they'll do like 15 episodes or, you know, 10 episodes. And we went 21.
No, breaking the chain, man. Doing things different. We play by our own rules.
Yeah, we
fuck
do.
Fuck them.
Obviously, from the fact that we haven't had an episode in like what, a month, so
well, there's kind of a baby involved. So
yeah, there is a baby involved. I'm actually actively holding her right now. So it's been a bit of a nightmare getting the schedules right, but we're here and we're ready to go. And today we'll be taking our unfortunate history chariots back in time to the land of togas, gladiators, and being fed grapes on daybeds. Today's topic is the one and only Julius Caesar.
What a big one.
Yeah.
So again, I still am staying to true to fashion where I know nothing about the episode when we come in, but I feel like I should know a bit about this at least.
Yeah, some people know a little bit about him at the very least. They know about his death possibly, but most people don't really know about him personally. They don't know about his ideologies and that. So it's good that we went into a lot of detail. This will be a one-part episode, although I feel like it probably could have fit into two parts. But like I said, with the scheduling and stuff, with the baby, it's very difficult to get all this stuff on in order. But I think we went into good detail on this episode.
We are just going to be cramming information down your throat at lightning speed.
Yeah, so get your pens out, get your pens and notepaper, because we're going to be emailing out a test for all of you to take.
Buckle up, motherfuckers. It's about to get real.
Yep. And it's going to get real by starting with Julius Caesar's early life, because we actually know some stuff about it, surprisingly enough.
Is this not the first one we've actually known like information about the young version of this person?
Or no, it's not the
first
one.
Covering.
It's not the first one, but it is very much not the norm when we're talking about people from like ancient times. So when we're talking about people from ancient times, we're normally like, you know, he was born and then he was 17. That's pretty much it.
10 years later and he was dead, and that's the story of whoever we was talking about.
Yeah, and then the majority of the episode is talking about the very unfortunate death.
Yeah.
But today's going to be a bit different. We are going to talk about an unfortunate death, though. Now, Gaius Julius Caesar was born 12th of July, 100 BC. Near Rome. He wasn't born in Rome. He was actually born into the family Julia. And in Rome, in these times, they would actually say he was born into the gens Julia, because that would mean the Julia family, the overarching family that a ton of other smaller families were attached to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this family was actually quite lofty with their ancestral claims. They claimed to be descendant from the Roman mythological character Eurylion?
So they were bragging about the incest, like, they were proud of it.
No, it wasn't necessarily incest. It was just that they were some way descended from this particular Roman mythological character. I suppose he could have had sex with a number of women and created a number of lines, you know?
I have six toes on each feet. That makes me clearly more advanced.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to become the head of the Senate. Now, his name was, let me try to pronounce his name again. It was either Aurelian, I think that's what it is, Aurelian, or Ascanius, or Julius. See, this mythological character was known by all of them.
They were like really different names.
They were very different names. I'm not really, they don't even have the same number of letters, so I don't know how they got all of these names.
They could very easily be different people.
Yeah, they could have been. Now, this particular person, we're going to go with, I think, Ascanius. Because I think that's Ascanius is a good one.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. That's my favorite. I've already forgotten the other two anyway, so it doesn't matter. We'll go with Ascanius.
Yeah, that's what we'll go with. Now, he was said to have been the son of the goddess Venus. It's pretty far-fetched to claim ancestry from Roman mythology, but Julius Caesar's family did actually have a particular reason for claiming it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like a lofty claim to say, we're descended from this guy, who's the son of Venus.
It's like I'm friends of a friend's, like, oh, my cousin's this famous dude, but he knew someone, blah, blah, blah. It's like your typical bullshit story.
Yeah, but is your cousin a planet, dick? Now, like I said, they actually did have a reason for claiming this, actually. Something that was a bit more concrete than just saying this person from Roman mythology is our ancestor. Ascanius was actually the legendary king of Alba Longa, and that's an ancient city near Rome. And Caesar's family was said to have come from Alba Longa. So, since they came from that city, obviously they just had to be related to the son of Venus. That's just the way it had to be.
You come from somewhere, you're instantly related to, again, a god.
Yeah.
And right? Planet.
Yeah. Or, like, if you come from, like the town of Jeffrey Dahmer. You are 100%, you've probably had a Pabst Blue Ribbon with him on a couch somewhere while he talked about eating butts.
Eating butts and brains of young Filipino boys.
Oh, God. Now, Caesar's family was not actually wealthy at the time of his birth, but they were still considered upper class. And the reason for this is because Alban families, so those families that actually descended from Alba Longa, like Caesar's, were granted upper class status. I believe this was due to the fact that the Julia family was very ancient, and obviously as a, I guess, self-proclaimed godlike. Although it is noted that the family was actually not snobbish, although they claimed to be descended from Venus. They weren't up their ass about it.
You can't do both. If you're going to claim you're a descendant of a god, you have to be a certain degree up your own ass.
I know, but apparently they weren't. Now, I should also mention the class structure of Rome, since I've just mentioned it, and it will come up again. Now, in Rome, you were either upper class or you weren't. You had no say in this. The upper class was referred to as the patricians, with the lower class being referred to as the slags. No, the plebeians.
Slags, you slags. It's still there. Season two, it's still there. We've still got the cries coming in hot.
Yeah. No, the lower class was referred to as plebeians. As that's where the term pleb comes from. So if you think, you know, you've seen the show Plebs, it's where it comes from. It's descended from plebeians. Now, as I mentioned, Caesar's family was patrician. However, as they were poor rich people, I guess you would kind of consider them upper middle class, they had no particular political clout. And that is a good point. They probably were upper middle class, although there was no third class for them to fit into. So they just kind of hung out at the very lower rungs of the upper class.
But they were still broke.
They were, but their family was ancient and descended from Venus. So...
Well, so just because you've been around for ages, that automatically, you know, like you can have nothing, but still be like, nah, you know, related to Venus, still broke.
Well, if your family dies out, you don't really get anything anyways. So they kept their family going, you know?
So they just hump their way to fucking...
upper class.
The upper echelons of society.
I think that's what Donald Trump did.
That's exactly, and I think he likes to hump some of those byproducts.
Not with his family, not his whole family line, just him in general. He humped his way up. He just... We don't get political here, okay?
Nope. We have no political standing.
Now, Caesar's family, like we said, had no real political clout. But what being patrician did afford their family was the ability to become consul. Now, the consul in Roman politics is generally regarded as the president or the prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
Except with a big caveat. It is actually always a co-consulship, meaning that the post is always shared between two people.
See, I feel like that makes sense, like more sense than just having one person have all the power, you know, like dish it out a little bit less, you know. I feel like it'd go to people's heads a little less if there was someone else there.
Well, it's been a running thing in all of politics to have some form of balance of power, because you never want one particular... That's why normally every single free country has three levels of government. We have the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. Those are all separate, and they kind of balance each other out by keeping each other in check. This particular issue, I mean, you had the Senate in Rome, but you also had these two co-consuls that could veto each other's decisions. So in general, you're kind of keeping it from being a dictatorship.
Yeah.
Or somewhat of a monarchy. So this one person can't make all the decisions themselves. They have to be vetoed by the other person. And the position is actually only held for 1 year.
Well, it kind of sounds like the Romans had the shit together, considering, you know, the time.
Well, yeah, they were very famous for their political structures. I mean, it's set up, even this setup, politics to this day. It also ends up changing towards the end of the story, but even that, all of this kind of had an effect on today's politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I said, patricians were able to become consuls, but plebeians actually could not.
Why? Why could plebeians? Because they're plebs?
Because they were plebeians, yeah. They were lower class. They just weren't allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
However, to keep a balance of power in this particular situation, the Senate, made up of other patrician family members, they would select candidates to become consuls. But it was the plebeians that would actually elect them.
Okay.
Yeah. So they still got to choose the person that was in charge of them, although they couldn't choose the pool to pull from, basically.
It's just kind of essentially just like a voting system, really. But
it is a voting system.
Right, it's exactly that, yes. Yeah. So like I presume there would be more plebeians than the other ones because, you know, they're the poorer class. So it's, I suppose it's the many deciding on who rules, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, it's basically the Senate narrowing down the options and then the plebeians saying, okay, we'll pull these two out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's similar to today where, like in the Electoral College in America... kind of narrows it down a bit. It's not exact, obviously, but there's a similarity there to the point where it's narrowing down the candidates. Oh, and actually, obviously, the parties select their own candidates. So, like, the Democratic Party selects their candidate. There's still a bit of an election up to that point, but still, many would argue that both Democratic and the Republican Party don't give you any say in any of that shit. We don't get political here. Okay.
No, not at all. Let's not talk about it.
Yeah.
unless it's Roman politics, we can talk about Roman politics.
Well, actually, my next note right now says I won't get too bogged down in the history of Roman politics. I just wanted to set the scene for a little later in the story. This is pretty much the gist of the politics that we really need to cover for this story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Caesar's parents, Gaius Caesar and Aurelia. Were apparently very respectable people and respectful people. So they were very well respected and also respected quite a few other people, including plebeians. So that's a very important distinction. But that didn't stop Gaius, Caesar's father, from straight up dying when Caesar was 16. This was said to have been from natural causes, which probably could have been a lion attack at this time in history.
Yeah.
Either way, his father's death made Caesar the man of the house at a fairly young age.
Well, but things what was the average life expectancy then, really? Like 16 then would have been like a full-fledged man, really, wouldn't it?
Somewhat, but he was still said to have been a child.
Essentially, yeah.
They're still saying, I think in Rome, especially with the class structure, it really solidified the idea of elders are more wise, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As opposed to being a 16-year-old, you can go out and, yeah, sure, you can have a family probably, you can do all of that, but making decisions in politics and stuff, no, you're nowhere near as qualified to do anything like that.
So basically no one will fucking listen to you.
Yeah. I mean, you can go and knock some people up, or knock some women up, but, you know, nobody's going to listen to you if you try to spout out some politics. Now, Rome at this time was having political problems, which I'll mention in a second, but many believed that the ruling class had run the country into the ground and there needed to be a change.
That sounds somewhat familiar to now in both our, you know, respected homelands.
Yeah, you can really pull some comparisons from this story to today. You really, really can. Now, Caesar's family, although patricians, felt the same and shared the plight of the plebeians, like I kind of mentioned earlier. And the plebeians were obviously hit hardest by any of the decisions made by the upper class or the patricians.
Mm-hmm.
So Caesar developed his own ideas of how the Roman state should be governed, even at this young age. And it was his goal to get to the point where he could implement those ideas. And because of that, Caesar dedicated himself to gaining a political career at this very early age in his life.
And, well, we know he did pretty well. I know that much.
He did, but he did have some stumbling blocks to that point.
Didn't know about them.
Yep. Now, at this point, at the point of Gaius Caesar's death, Rome was going through a civil war, one of many, actually. It went through quite a few. Essentially, the lower class did not like the way the upper class was running the country, like I kind of alluded to earlier. So they decided to band together to change the government in a sort of revolution. Now, the main antagonist to this civil war was Lucius Cornelius Sulla. He was a proponent of the upper class and soon to be dictator of Rome.
Hmm.
Like I said, remember, the leaders of Rome, or the highest echelon, was the consuls, but it was two of them. There was never a dictator. That was by choice.
I was going to say, that's come out of nowhere, isn't it? They actually ended up with a dictator, despite, you know, actually being pretty reasonable when it comes to making decisions like that anyway.
Yeah, well, that will come in and out of the story as we progress anyways. That whole ideology will filter in and out of the story. Now, on the plebeian side was Lucian Cornelius Cinna. Don't get confused by these two. We're going to refer
to... There's too many names. Yeah. Too many similar names.
Yeah, like literally, Lucius Cornelius and Lucian Cornelius. But we're going to refer to the bad guy as Sulla and the good guy as Cinna. Now, these two commanders fought each other in multiple battles and were, for all intents and purposes, mortal enemies. Well, Caesar decided to do his part in the fight at his very young age of 16, and he did so by marrying Cinna's daughter, Cornelia, which was a great way to fight a civil war. Just get some bush.
I was like, okay, how did that help? Like, it helped Caesar get some bush.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. No, it was basically him making a statement that he was supporting the plebeians by marrying their leader's daughter. And that was, statements like this at this time in history were very big. They really had an effect on people. You can make the smallest things, which we'll discuss in a moment. You can make the smallest decisions that will change a large amount of people's idea of you.
Okay.
However, unfortunately for Caesar and the rest of the plebeians, Sulla did finally manage to beat Cinna in battle. And this effectively set Sulla up to have near total control over the Roman state. And Sulla then decided to punish Caesar for his marriage to Cornelia. He told Caesar that he would be forced to divorce Cornelia. And along with this, he would lose his property, his dowry, and all of the other valuables that he owned. He actually did lose all of that. But
so he essentially became a plebeian himself anyway.
Well, yeah, well, I guess a plebeian in definition, but not a plebeian in stature.
Okay.
But to this order to divorce Cornelia, Caesar said, "Screw us, you is douchebaggius," and ran off to exile to military service.
Fuck off, you if, Contishef.
Well, it was during this time in the military that Caesar initially gained some of his truly impressive oratory skills. He was a fantastic speaker. He distinguished himself amongst his fellow soldiers, and he was actually awarded a civic crown for his service, which is similar to being awarded a medal from, you know, meritorious service.
Mm-hmm.
Now, soon enough, Sulla actually died, and Caesar found this to be a good time to return to Rome. But he wasn't done trying to fight the good fight for the plebeians. When he returned home, he decided to become a prosecuting advocate or lawyer, and his initial prosecuting targets were those that assisted Sulla during his counter-revolution against Cinna, which is an awesome way to say fuck you to that regime.
Yeah, big time, man.
Yeah, he's like, I waited, and then I came back full force. You guys are going to prison. You're going to pay some money.
That's all. That's it. Like,
yeah. Well, yeah.
I picture it being so much more brutal. You know, we've done like Viking torture, all that sort of shit. So when I hear he's like going to punish him, I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? It's like, you are going to pay us some money.
Well, to that effect, you're actually going to be very surprised in Caesar, and I'll point it out when we get there. But you will be very surprised in how he treats his enemies.
Okay.
Now, after spending some time as a prosecutor, he decided to further hone his amazing oratory skills. To do so, he traveled to Rhodes to study under apparently the world's best speaker, Molon, which sounds suspiciously like colon. I find that very interesting that to go to learn to speak, like you can imagine doing like a public speaking class in your university, but he had to literally go to a different country to go study under this guy that was apparently the best speaker in the world.
Just to get better at talking. Like there must have been an easier way.
There must have been. Could they not have Skyped, or could they not have done some sort of Zoom call?
Google Duo.
Google Duo, sponsor us. Now, however, on his way to Rhodes, Caesar was actually captured by pirates.
Fuck, getting hectic now. Didn't know this.
This is real. I'm not pulling.
I forgot that the gullibling me was used to be a thing. I thought you might have been doing it again.
No, I am not doing that. This is absolutely real. He was captured by pirates, and he was in his early 20s or so at this point. Now, while in the pirates' custody, the pirates found that Caesar was of nobility, and they decided to ransom him off. They asked for 20 talents of silver, but Caesar disagreed. He said they should ask for 50. And he was said to have maintained an air of superiority throughout the entire event. Just like, I'm so much better than you guys. Please stop wasting my time. For the love of God, I'm worth so much more than 20 talents. What the hell's wrong with you?
This is boring now. Can you just...
Yeah, pretty much. However, he also told them that once he was free, he would hunt them down. To which the pirates just laughed at him, laughed and laughed and laughed. Well, the ransom was paid and Caesar was released. And then he gathered a fleet of ships, hunted the pirates down, and crucified every single one of them.
Jesus fuck. Okay, that's more Caesar-y. That's more what I was expecting when it comes to punishments.
Yeah, that's one of the forms of punishment. But it'll get a bit more interesting in a moment when we talk about some other people. So you will be surprised.
Okay.
Now, after this, he did decide. He just went to do his schooling in Rhodes.
After literally like, murdering an entire ship full of people, like, well, that little chore's done. Like, as he brushes dust off his shoulder, back to school, whistling.
And he wasn't really even. He wasn't deterred by it at all. He just kind of went. And actually, pirating in the ocean. I think it's the Mediterranean Sea, right? Pirating in the Mediterranean was relatively normal at this point because the Civil War had apparently put the whole area into chaos. So this Civil War, I assume, destroyed the navies and there was no way to protect against pirating. So pirating was a very normal event, but he just said, he just went back, went to Rhodes. Now, after this schooling, he returned to Rome and truly began his political career. And he actually successfully gained a place in the very lower tier of the Roman government. I'm not going to say what it is because there's so many different things you can do in the government in Rome. There is so many different levels, but he did get a place in the lowest part. Throughout his political career, he did grow in popularity, but he also went quite far into debt. He was consistently gaining momentum, gaining one political office after the other. And actually, at this point, he was very likely to become consul. Very quickly, he moved up in politics, mainly because of his oratory skills and his popularity with the people and how he really related to the plebeians.
Kind of a winning formula, isn't it? Like, you know what I mean? Like, become a man of the people and just be good at talking. Like, that's all it takes.
Yeah, be a rich guy and support the lower class. Come on. That's all you got to do. Now, the election to consul would be very expensive. It's a very, very expensive ordeal. And at this point, he had already gone into debt. There was really no way that he could afford to hold an election for himself or to, you know, market his election. So he approached Marcus Licinius Crassus, the wealthiest man in Rome at the time. Now, Crassus actually paid off a large part of Caesar's debts and then guaranteed the rest, giving Caesar the opportunity to move further in his political career. Now, in a supposedly very bribery-infested election, Caesar was actually able to gain his consulship and one of the highest political offices in Rome. And the bribery wasn't from his side. The bribery was from his opponents. Everybody wanted to keep him from gaining office because they knew that he supported the lower class way too much.
Yeah.
And he was coming in with these radical ideas to change everything.
Caesar sounds like kind of a dude.
He does sound like kind of a dude. I'm probably romanticizing him a bit, but we do have some legitimate grievances that you would have with him coming up. But
okay,
he was a man of the people.
Yeah, that's what people generally can see why he got there.
Yeah, exactly. However, the consulship wasn't actually enough for Caesar. Since he had to serve alongside another consul, he couldn't really make the changes he preferred. So he hatched an idea. Obviously, Caesar already knew Crassus, and he knew him well, and obviously knew of his incredible fortune. There was also another man with great power by the name of Pompey. Now, Crassus and Pompey were mortal enemies since the beginning of the previously mentioned civil war. Yeah, one of them.
There's a lot of mortal enemies in this time. Yeah. Was this like the opposite of like soulmates? Like, you are my mortal enemy.
Yeah.
And that's you forever now. Like, yeah. We are mortal enemies.
Pretty much. They really took that shit seriously back then. Now, Caesar was already in debt to Crassus, like we said, but he had also gone into a bit of debt to Pompey. And from this, he kind of saw an opportunity, and Caesar thought this would be a good time to try to unite the two men in exchange for all of the help they had given him, with basically giving him money. And because of their fortunes and power, Caesar invited the two men to work with him to control public business in total.
Did it work? Is that a good idea to get, you know, start, you know, like essentially get into like bed with two mortal enemies?
Well, he felt that all of their combined power, all three of their combined power, and the wealth of the two men, with all of that, he felt it would be easy to make changes all on their own. And the men agreed, and the alliance was formed. And this was actually referred to as the First Triumvirate.
Triumvirate? Like, it sounds like some weird woodwind instrument I've never heard of.
Yeah, but it's a bitchin' instrument. Like, this was actually crazy to listen to or to read about. Now, with this new power of the triumvirate, Caesar was effectively able to sidestep the Senate and his co-consul in making decisions. Now, for instance, Caesar would basically propose a law, any law, and if the Senate, most people in the Senate may not support him directly, but the law would also be supported by Crassus and Pompey, people that had enormous clout. And with their power and their money, they were actually able to have other people share their views.
So basically, what to take from this is, if you just get two sugar daddies, you can do what you like.
Exactly.
Ladies, take note.
Yeah. And with the amount of power that everyone held in the situation, the law would nearly always be passed. This was just how it was, and it did work. Now, throughout his year as consul, remember I said you can only serve 1 year as consul. Now, throughout this first year of consul, the Senate and the upper class families did not trust what Caesar was doing with Roman politics. Obviously, I'm not entirely sure if this first triumvirate was hidden knowledge or not, but even if it was hidden, he still had these ideas that he wanted to implement into Roman politics that a lot of people didn't agree with.
Yeah.
They felt he was trying to turn the government into a monarchy, basically, by avoiding the Senate altogether. So all of his decisions were somehow, if they didn't know about the triumvirate, they were still getting passed. So what the fuck? So they attempted multiple times to limit his power. The main way they would try to do this is by granting Caesar control over woodlands as opposed to a province after his year as consul was over. Because remember, he was actually still part of the military.
Oh, really?
So after his consulship, he would be given control of a certain area of the Roman state. And generally, people that have quite a bit of power would be given control over a province, a big place that would need an army to protect it.
So basically, they just did not want him with an army, basically, because they know that equals power again.
Exactly, exactly. Yes, they did not want him to gain control of an army. They didn't want him to have more power than he already had from this triumvirate. So they tried to get him to give him control over woodlands, which is like, come on, man, Jesus. You only get like Secret Service members if you get woodlands, which is kind of a rough deal. However, each time they tried to do this, the Senate failed due to the power of the triumvirate. Through a series of these attempts to limit Caesar's powers, the plans backfired so much that it came to the point that Caesar was actually in command of four legions of soldiers.
So that fucking went the other way than what they wanted, didn't it? So they're trying to limit it, and he just ends up with like everything.
Yeah, four legions of soldiers for one person. That's a huge force. And he would soon put these forces to good use. Now, after his year as consul, Caesar felt it was probably a good idea to repay his debts by now. He had the four legions at his disposal, and a large part of Gaul, or roughly modern-day France, was undiscovered at this point. So he decided to take his legions west to check the area out, and when he arrived, he found that it was inhabited by those barbarians, or as we call them today, the French. We're not on any rankings in France, so I don't give a shit.
So fuck France. Fuck you guys in France.
No, I'm kidding. But
boost the listenership up and you'll be our favorites.
Yeah, that's thanks. All it takes. Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you so much. Now, he was initially very cordial with the armies of Gaul, But the Roman occupation of Gaul was not accepted by everyone. And soon, all-out war broke out in the region. And the Romans were apparently pretty much outmatched by the attacking armies, mainly in size. They had really big armies of barbarians in this area. But Caesar, ever the amazing leader, rallied his men with his exceptional oratory skills, accompanied by, quote, impassioned gestures and a high-pitched voice.
See, the first two I can understand, but a high-pitched voice, is that what really gets you motivated?
I didn't know that he had a high-pitched voice in general. I was expecting something along the lines of, like, Russell Crowe at a Gladiator. Are you not entertained?
Yeah, exactly. That's what you want to go into battle. Not like high pitch.
Come on,
like,
men.
I wish to humiliate a pheasant.
Onwards. Well,
are you not entertained?
Well, in a few short years, the area of Gaul was relatively completely conquered.
Well, that turned quick, didn't it?
Well, yeah. They were outmatched in size, but he was just such a good military leader. As a general, he was incredible. And he just destroyed them. So following this, Caesar decided to head back home. Until he decided, as one does, to instead sail to Britain. Which, I mean, there was no real... I mean, there is a reason for this. He did say that he decided to sail to Britain because a force had come from Britain to assist one of the Gaul forces that was attacking him. So he decided to sail over there and give them, you know, what for.
See, like one of the few times that England and Britain has actually, you know, sided with the French over the years.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Because typically we're fighting them.
Yeah, but that ended, if anybody's listened to our Captain Morgan episode, that ended when one of the Captain Morgan's men was stabbed in the back. So yeah, definitely listen to our Captain Morgan episode if you want to hear about when the French just did not like the British.
Yeah, yep, that happened.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about his time in Britain. There's really not that much to it, other than the fact that he sailed there. When he landed, he was attacked and didn't really do very well. He had to leave, and then he came back with more people, and he landed, and then he fought a bit more, and he attacked some villages, but then he just ended up coming back to Rome. Not much there.
England! Yeah. All right, taking that as a little victory for
me. Because there was nothing fucking there. They didn't want to leave. They probably left a couple of guys behind, and they were like, God, this sucks. It's just, it's so green. There's no stone buildings anywhere.
Why is it always raining?
Oh, fuck this. I miss the Mediterranean. Well, at the same time that all this was happening, the members of the First Triumvirate were experiencing difficulties in Rome. Now, Crassus, who was the very, very wealthy man, was actually killed leading an attempted invasion of the East. So obviously he had gone the opposite way to Caesar, but he had completely failed in his mission.
Not as good as Caesar, then.
Not as good as Caesar, obviously.
So Caesar's one sugar daddy down.
Yeah, one sugar daddy down. Now, Pompey married the daughter of a political rival of Caesar. And Pompey was actually himself appointed consul.
Ooh.
Now, these two actions effectively killed the triumvirate and Caesar's foothold in Rome, which was now on the brink of another civil war.
They just could not get on.
They couldn't. And everybody in America is spouting out like, oh, we're going to have a civil war because there's racism. And it's like, dude, Rome had like five in the amount of time that you've had these, the amount of time the protests started. Just chill.
It took like a very little inconvenience to be like, fuck it, civil war.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, bread went up by like four, so like four, whatever. What was Roman currency back then?
I think Italians. Talons?
Bread went up by a talion. Civil war.
Fuck that. A full talion? Screw us, U.S. Now, the destruction of the triumvirate obviously didn't make Caesar too happy. But what made matters worse was what happened afterwards. Caesar was ordered by the Roman Senate, led by Pompey, to disband his entire force. All of his legions. Obviously, since Pompey got into power, the Senate was saying, you know what? This guy has too much power over us. He's no longer consul, and I should have mentioned this, but I didn't. But as a consul, you're not bound by any laws. So, actually, and that might be why he was able to create the triumvirate. But as a consul, you are immune to any law whatsoever.
So you can do whatever you want, basically.
You can do whatever you want as long as the other consul doesn't veto you. anything.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you could just kill somebody if you wanted to.
And providing, like, no one was like, nah, kind of a dick move, like, you're fine.
Yeah, yeah, honestly, you were fine to do whatever. And that's why the Triumvirate was so hardcore on getting Caesar his army. Because they knew that if he had the power of multiple legions behind him, he would still hold enough power in the Roman government. Because he would have this power behind him to be able to do what he does in a moment.
He could literally start a war.
He could literally start a war, exactly. And that's why they were trying to keep him from getting this amazing amount of power. But now that he wasn't in charge and they were kind of ordering him to get his forces up, he was like, you douchebags. So to this order to disband his forces, he denied, and he was accused by Pompey of insubordination and treason. And this upset Caesar even further. So he replied by committing insubordination and treason.
It's like, you don't tell me what to do. I'll do it myself. Yeah. It's like if you can't fire me, I quit. Like, it's literally that, but in like an extreme level.
Yeah, exactly. So afterwards, he brought his forces back to Rome with him, famously crossing the Rubicon with one of his forces, and then the rest met up later. And he had the full intention of ending this civil war himself before it even began. And as he arrived in Rome, he found that most of the Senate, including Pompey, had actually fled the city. They were like, you need to get rid of that army. No, and they just he took one step towards him, and they were fucking gone.
Get rid of your army. He's like, why? Why should I? Like, what are you going to do? I've got an army.
Yeah. No, I'm good. No, I'm good. Yeah, I'm cool. Now, Caesar took his army in pursuit of Pompey, actually, and he fought pretty much all of Pompey's lieutenants multiple times. And he chased Pompey all over the Middle East and down to Africa. Now, at the same time this was happening, Caesar was actually elected dictator in Rome.
So it's kind of become like the exact opposite of what he really wanted, wasn't it? He thought he didn't want dictatorships and that.
In a way, yes.
But he's not going to say no, is he?
No, he actually did deny the title.
Oh.
He denied this title of dictator and instead took a title, a second title of consul for another 12 months. He actually did always seem keen to avoid seeming like an outright dictator or a monarch. He wanted to be seen as a man of the people, 100%, not in charge of the people. But he was pissed off at Pompey, and he did not want him to get away with his treason towards him. So as I just mentioned, Caesar had followed Pompey to Africa, Egypt to be exact. However, once Caesar arrived, he was greeted with Pompey's severed head, to which he was said to have received in complete tears.
What he received in tears?
Yeah, because actually Caesar had planned to pardon Pompey, and he was actually going to allow him to return to Rome.
Jesus!
He actually would have allowed him to return to Rome, and he would have given him some high office in his political regime.
Imagine if they just had phones. They could just send a text. They would have saved all of this.
Yeah, he'd be like, hey, you up? Yeah. Why don't you come back to Rome, baby? Come on.
I forgive you, baby. I forgive you.
Nah, man, it's a trick. You're going to kill me.
Nah, man. Come back to bed, son.
No, come on. Well, apparently, the Egyptians had heard about Caesar pursuing Pompey, and once Pompey had showed up in Egypt, they felt that it was best to kill him, lest they be seen as assisting him in his escape. Now, Caesar, after learning of this, had Pompey's assassins put to death.
Jesus Christ, they thought they were helping.
Yeah, they thought they were helping. They were like, wait.
I bet they're like, we're going to get such a good reward for this. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Yeah. This is what... It's like telling his wife, like, this is what we've been dreaming of, people. It's red panty night tonight, come on. Dead.
I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on what happened in Egypt specifically, because there was quite a bit that happened, but I'm going to go into kind of an overview. Now, it was here in Africa that, Egypt, obviously, that Caesar met another someone of historical importance, Cleopatra.
Hmm.
Yeah. Egypt was currently experiencing its own civil war, so Caesar decided to assist Cleopatra in quelling the population. He did so successfully, affording Cleopatra rule over Egypt, although not before giving her a baby.
Allegedly.
Wow. We don't know if that's 100% true, but it's generally accepted by quite a few historians.
I bet he didn't. I bet he just came back to Rome. He's like, yeah, I totally nailed it.
She did have a son, and Cleopatra did name her son Caesarion, which translates to Little Caesar. So we don't know if it's 100%, but she definitely believed it was his. So, you know, don't know if she was getting around or not, but she definitely was getting with the world leaders.
God, yeah.
That's kind of like fucking Putin.
Ugh. Okay. Would you rather Putin or Kim Jong-un?
Oh, God, no. None. While in Egypt, Caesar fought multiple opponents, but none were very intimidating. Caesar was not very impressed with the local fighters, and this was when he said his famous phrase, Vena vidi vici, I came, I saw, I conquered. And he said this in a way as just a throwaway way, like, I came, I saw, I conquered. They were nothing. I just conquered their country and that was it.
And then his second most famous phrase was live, laugh, love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And many women have that tattooed on the small of their back. What a reminder of Caesar the Great. Well, Caesar returned to Rome after some time in Egypt, and he was again given the title of dictator. Although this time, I do believe the title stuck.
And he just lived with it, I guess.
Yeah, it wasn't... the way it seems is that he wasn't referred to as dictator. He wasn't called anything like royalty. He wasn't called king. He was Caesar, but everyone knew his power.
Mm-hmm. You don't fuck with him.
You don't fuck with him. Although, I mean, apparently he was trying to, pardon Pompey. So I guess you can fuck with him a little bit.
Yeah, but I guess you could a bit, yeah.
You can start a civil war, but, don't kill a political opponent.
And just don't call him a dictator.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned earlier that Caesar had planned to pardon Pompey and allow him to return to Rome. Now, this may have come from his experience in the first civil war that we mentioned. You see, Sulla, like we said, the civil war's previously mentioned antagonist, he was said to have been very brutal against the opposing Romans during the Civil War. He supposedly showed very little mercy in his prosecution. Everybody that opposed him, at any chance he got, they were killed. Now, when you compare this to Caesar being in tears when he was handed Pompey's severed head, you can see a stark contrast in empathy.
Yeah.
He was very likely affected by Sulla's brutal nature. Caesar seemed to think that all of his countrymen were worthy of forgiveness in some way. Obviously, he did not think that the barbarians in Gaul or in Britain were worthy of any sort of forgiveness. He kind of slaughtered them without any hesitation. But when it came to his own countrymen, he did see that they were worthy of some sort of respect, and he felt he always needed to give that to them. In fact, he not only forgave them, I mentioned this a bit earlier, but he also offered most of them responsible positions in his own regime. However, this would actually prove to be a fatal decision, because some of these men were beginning to plot against Caesar.
That tends to happen when you've got power and, technically a dictator.
And you forgive every single one of your enemies.
Yeah, I suppose people start to think, I'll get away with it, even if I fail.
Pretty much, yeah. Now, supposedly, according to Roman historians, there were three last straws that pushed some of the senators to turn on Caesar. That's quote-unquote three last straws. But there was some situations that caused at least the upper echelon of people to look at him in a different light. Now, the first happened in December 45 BC. The Senate voted to bestow a large group of honors upon Caesar. And to do this, they marched as a senatorial delegation to see Caesar at the Temple of Venus Genetrix. When they arrived, Caesar did not rise to greet the senators. And he also rejected the honors, joking that his honors needed to be cut back, if anything. And this apparently gave off the impression that Caesar no longer cared about the Senate or cared about their opinions.
It seems like a pretty chill thing to do.
Yes, but like we said earlier, the smallest things that you do in a time like this can completely warp people's opinion of you.
Jesus Christ.
Especially when it's more upper class people. I mean, upper class people, they get upset with you if you don't take your hat off when you enter a home. Even that's seen as rude.
Touchy.
Yeah, spitting on the floor. I mean, what are we? The queen? Get the fuck out of here.
You know? Pissing in the corner. Come on, I need to go.
Pissing on the table. I mean, I don't get it anymore. I don't know how I can live in this world.
It's too many rules, man.
Too many rules. I can't do this. What are we, in ancient Rome? I bite my thumb at you, sir.
You guys are all Nazis, man.
I thought this was America. I thought this was fucking America. Now, the second incident occurred soon afterwards, early or mid 44 BC. Now, two tribunes, and this is a title of an elected official. I'm not going to go into it, but they were called tribunes. They were political officials. They found a crown, or a diadem is what it was referred to as, but it will just say crown.
A fancy hat.
Yeah, fancy hat, placed on the head of a statue of Caesar. Now, the tribunes ordered that the crown be removed as it was a symbol of Jupiter, and a symbol of royalty. No one actually knew who had placed the crown on the statue, but Caesar actually suspected it was the tribunes themselves, so that they could have the honor of removing it. These dickheads.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
That's such a shit plan.
Yeah, it's a very shit plan. But like I said, small actions have great consequences at this time. Now, further to this royalty claim, Caesar was also greeted by someone in a crowd soon after this diadem was found, and the person in the crowd shouted out and referred to him as King. And apparently, he brushed it off. So King at this time was called Rex. So R-E-X. He said, Rex, Caesar, or like Rex. And then he said, Caesar responded to saying, like, I am not Rex, I am Caesar. But supposedly, this was a bit of a play on words, because Rex, while also meaning king, was also a family name. So some people thought he was just correcting this plebeian by saying, no, that's not my name. My name's Caesar. Ha 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 ha. But I am your king. Ha 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 ha. It was more of a joke.
It kind of sounds like he really just didn't give a shit about these. Like, you know, you say how the small things can have massive waves in this power, like in the higher echelons of society. I feel like Caesar's the only one who just didn't really care. Like,
no.
He's probably like saw none of this coming. He's like, nah, that's a thing. Oh, well.
He was dictator at this time. You know what I mean? He didn't give a shit. What were they going to do to him? He was above every law. He didn't matter. He could do whatever the hell he wanted. But the same tribunes that had found the diadem previously also heard the person in the crowd say this, and they weren't amused, and they ordered that man to be arrested. So he was arrested for calling Caesar King. Now, the final incident happened at the festival of the Lupercalia on 15th of February, 44 BC. This all happened within the same small time frame. Now, Mark Antony, a friend and co-consul with Caesar at one point, placed a crown on Caesar's head, another diadem, in front of a large crowd. It was a big celebration. He decided to walk up to him and place this crown on his head, to which about five people clapped. Like, they were like, yay, yay.
Okay. And the little crowd, like, oh, no one's clapping.
And nobody's clapping. Everybody's kind of like, what is he doing? And Caesar removed the crown, and he placed it to the side to be used as a sacrifice to Jupiter. And he said, Jupiter alone of the Romans is king. Which was received by an eruption of enthusiasm from the crowd. He really knew how to work a crowd, Caesar.
Yeah, man. Sounds like he knew his audience, man.
He 100% did. But some believed that this moment was actually a chance for Caesar to test the waters, as it were, to see if he would be accepted as king. So he had planned it, and then if they did erupt in applause, he'd be like, yeah. And if they didn't, he would also find a way to make them still love him. Some people claim that. Either way, they didn't like him for it.
It's still kind of clever.
It is very clever, yeah. That's what politicians do even to this day.
Yeah.
Now, the plot against Caesar began with two men, whom Caesar had actually previously pardoned, Cassius and Brutus. Both had been previous enemies to Caesar.
Okay.
Now, the men met and decided that something had to be done about Caesar before he became king of the Romans. After all these, quote, last three straws, they really felt like they needed to do something. So they started recruiting other members of the Senate to their cause. Now, Brutus believed if they didn't have enough people supporting them, it would just look like they were killing somebody.
Yeah, it's exactly.
But if everyone in the Senate, or at least a large majority of the Senate, supported them, it would look like they were doing the right thing for the country.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. It's very misguided.
yeah. It seems like they're really doing a bad thing for the country, but hey-ho, let's crack on.
Yeah, they were doing a very, very bad thing for the country. But they succeeded in recruiting a majority of the Senate to their cause, including some that had actually supported Caesar outright. Some people that were never Caesar's enemies, but that were still taken aback by those last three straws and felt that Caesar probably should not have as much power as he had at this point. Now, with the force assembled, the senators decided that the next time they met with Caesar, he would die.
Okay.
Now, the chosen day was the Ides of March, which was a day used by the Romans as a deadline for settling debts. You can kind of count it as your tax deadline, but it was more about, you owe me this debt to the Ides of Mars. If you don't pay me by then, I'm going to cut off your hand.
Okay, I get it. Now, I get it, kind of.
Kind of, yeah. The taxman's never threatened to cut off my hand, but I get it.
No, but it takes a lot more than my fucking hand. I wish you would take my hand rather than most of my fucking wages.
Yeah, I agree. Douchebags. And what are we paying for? To be shut down during the pandemic? What the fuck?
Fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't fun anymore.
Now, all of the conspirators met at the Senate House and awaited Caesar's arrival. However, he did not show. Apparently, a seer or fortune teller had told Caesar that he would not live past the Ides of March, and this had upset Caesar's wife quite a bit, and she begged him to stay home. And after a while, he said, okay, I'll stay home, and he sent Mark Antony to disperse the Senate. However, one of the senators went to Caesar's home and convinced him to come, to which Caesar agreed. He said to him, what, are you going to trust men? Are you going to trust these ladies and their crazy dreams? Come on! And that apparently made Caesar walk on. And on his way to the Senate House, Caesar apparently saw the same seer once again, to whom he said, well, the Ides of March have come. To which the seer said, yes, but they are not yet gone. Which she was right.
Okay.
She was very much right. Now, once Caesar arrived, he was handed a petition to look over. And as he read it, he was slowly surrounded by the conspirators, using the guise of offering assistance with the petition. He waved them away, but one of the conspirators grabbed Caesar's toga and drew out a dagger. And he tried to stab Caesar in the neck, but Caesar actually caught his hand. Caesar was in incredible shape, even at this point in his life. He was in incredible shape, and he could fight off quite a few people.
Especially people from, like, the Senate. So I can't picture them being, like, the peak of physical shape.
No, you know, like, I wouldn't think so either.
Rich higher-ups, and you get, then you got, like, Caesar with, like, abs.
Yeah, yeah. He's, like, balding, but he's got, like an eight-pack. But as he grabbed this person's hand, the senator yelled out for help, and the rest of the conspirators joined in, and they all set to stabbing Caesar. And he tried to escape, but he was blinded by blood in his eyes, and he tripped and fell on the steps. But the men did not stop. They continued stabbing him while he laid on the ground. And in the end, he was stabbed 23 times. And the fatal stabbing came from Brutus, a man whom Caesar had shown an amazing amount of affinity for, pardoning him from his past crimes and making him a part of his government. And when Caesar saw that Brutus was part of the plan, he supposedly said, "Et tu, Brute," which would translate to, "You too, Brutus." And he then took his last breath and died on the Senate House floor while the conspirators fled, and his body was left for some time, hours, until three slaves placed him into a litter and carried him home with one arm hanging down.
No, what a story, man. That is truly unfortunate, because he actually sounded like a good leader as well.
Yeah, and the story's not done.
Okay.
Now, following Caesar's assassination, the conspirators ran through the street, proclaiming to the people of Rome that, "We're free now! We're free! Caesar is gone! The tyrant's gone!" trying to still claim that Caesar was a power-hungry dictator. Although, they were met with silence, as the people of Rome had shut themselves inside their homes after hearing the news of Caesar's assassination. They didn't want to hear anything about it. And the Senate then attempted to press the fact that Caesar had indeed been a tyrant, but this idea was met with a lot of resistance. Now, Caesar, prior to his death, apparently left his name to his grandnephew Gaius Octavius as his sole heir. Now, what this meant by leaving his name was that Octavius was given the same power that Caesar had held.
Okay.
Now, the people of Rome instantly fell in love and in allegiance with Octavius, as did Caesar's friends in the Senate. He was very young, Octavius, but he was very well respected. And since he had all of this power, he had instantly stopped his studies, stopped what he was doing, and he knew that he had to come to the Senate to represent Julius Caesar in the best light. Now, some of the conspirators had fled the city, including Cassius and Brutus. They were found actually in Greece. Cassius and Brutus were both developing an army in another attempt to take Rome in a somewhat another civil war, a bit.
Just a tad. A little bit civil war, right?
Yeah. Although the assassination of Julius Caesar had not done anything for their cause, they had not gained anybody in Rome. They've not gained their respect or gained their fealty for this assassination. So it pretty much backfired on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Octavius felt it was best to build an enormous force as well, and he joined forces with Mark Antony and another previous friend of Caesar's to form the Second Triumvirate.
Oh, right, two triumvirates.
Yeah.
Bring it on, man.
They then successfully raised an army of 45 legions.
How big's one legion?
Let's Google it.
I should have asked this a while ago when he got four legions.
Okay, so a legion was roughly a brigade size composed of 4,200 infantry and 300 cavalry.
Jesus Christ, that's one.
Yeah.
That's one.
Yeah, yeah. So you're talking a giant force.
That's big.
Yeah. Now, these men in the Second Triumvirate actually learned from Caesar's mistakes. They saw his mistake of offering mercy to his enemies. And instead of offering any form of mercy, they decided to slaughter the armies of Cassius and Brutus, instead choosing to perform actions similar to Sulla, who, I don't know if you can argue whether or not, was right in his decisions.
Well, you could kind of probably say, yeah, he was. Don't forgive your enemies, people. Keep the fire burning.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure if Caesar would have appreciated them murdering all of his enemies or not, but either way, they got their revenge when they defeated both Cassius and Brutus in a battle soon thereafter. Now, Octavius and Mark Antony went on to lead very interesting lives themselves, but those will have to be stories for another time.
Okay.
Now, Caesar was a military genius, and quite possibly a genius in general. He spent his entire life attempting to better the life of his countrymen, even though this sometimes meant ruining the lives of those from foreign lands, like the people of Gaul. However, his forgiveness could not have been more impressive to his Roman enemies, although it could also not have been more badly placed. It was Caesar's hope to help his people, all of his people. And it's quite tragic that this is actually what eventually killed him. Had he been as brutal as Sulla was before him, he could have easily lived another 20 years, which would have given him the opportunity to make the changes he thought would better his country and indeed the world at this time. But in the end, he was killed by those to which he showed the utmost compassion, and that is what's truly unfortunate.
Truly unfortunate. Those dicks.
Yeah. And that's the story of Julius Caesar, somewhat. I mean, if we missed anything, feel free to just send us an email, you know, put it together, mm-hmm. put it in a yep. very well-written email, the best email you've ever written, to proofread it, send it to a friend to have it proofread it, send it to an editor, and then forward it to us telling us what we got wrong. Until you do that, don't email us.
Yeah, we don't care.
Yeah. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed it. Yeah, first episode back.
Yep, season two. Good to be back after a bit of a hiatus and a bit of a struggle getting it done. Like it's been hard, especially for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the baby and stuff, it makes it all a bit difficult. And I started my master's degree, which has been hell on earth. So it's all been a bit hectic. But I'm happy that we were able to get this done because I really want to start back up again. I don't really know if we'll be able to say we'll have a set day when we'll release each week. It might have to be played by ear for a little bit, but we'll see. We're trying our best to get everything solidified.
Yeah. We know how much you like love surprises.
Yeah,
so
yeah. We're trying to involve Sam a lot more as well. So it's also getting all of our schedules together. So we will keep you updated. If you want to keep updated, just join our Facebook group. Just search for the Unfortunate History Facebook group or follow us on Facebook, follow us on any social media. You can actually now Google, just Google Unfortunate History and we pop right up. We're the very first link. And so is all of our episodes. So you can Google the show now. Do that if you'd like. I want to thank the listeners for continuing to listen while we were on our bit of a break. We actually have gone up and we went up in multiple rankings. We were in the charts in Hong Kong for a bit. We were in the charts in, let's see here. We were in the charts in, I think, Thailand. We were in the charts in Hungary and a few other places. So thank
That's
you.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening while we've been gone. It's been so appreciated to see that everybody's still enjoying it. We got more reviews and stuff as well, which was just fantastic. I really do appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Cool. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Fucking hell.
Yeah. I'd like to plug our Q&A episode. Obviously, we'd had to wait a long time for that. But if you want to ask any of us a question, me, Sam, or Greg, if you want to ask any of us a question, just email us at info@unfortunatehistory.com after you've proofread it and send it to an editor. Mm-hmm. Then also, if you want to buy some merch, we've never been in more need of merch. So it's a pandemic. You need a shirt. So
and some socks and all the other stuff, yeah. Please.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for supporting us, though. Really good to be back. And if you have any suggestions for episodes, just email us at info@unfortunatehistory.com. Greg, do you want to shout anything out?
All I've got is you caught me off guard then, Cody. I think we've done all the shout-outs in one go there.
That's all right, then. If you want to follow me, just Google Cody Pennington.
And if you want to follow me, just Facebook, Greg Skinner, or on Instagram, it's back to GSkin93. Should probably stop changing it, but hey-ho. Yeah, that's my plug.
Is what it is. Yeah, guys, just get in touch with the show. If you want to follow the show, just Google Unfortunate History. But with that, unfortunately, we got to go. So stay unfortunate.
Stay unfortunate, guys. Ciao.
Bye.